Royal jelly is a glandular secretion that comes from the glands in the heads of worker bees. It is called royal jelly because it is the unique diet of the queen bee designate. When worker bees decide that there is a need for a new queen bee, they will feed several larvae large amounts of royal jelly. This type of feeding causes the larvae to develop as a queen bee. This whitish-yellow jelly has a consistency that is creamier and less viscous than ordinary honey and has a bitter, though not completely offensive, taste. Recently, various purported healthful benefits have been claimed regarding consuming royal jelly, everything from strengthening one's immune system to contributing to emotional well-being. And whether or not there is any validity to these claims, they've created a market for this otherwise obscure product. Now, royal jelly differs from ordinary honey in many ways. While ordinary honey is sweet, royal jelly is bitter. While ordinary honey is produced by honeybees by collecting nectar and storing it in a sac and then converting it into honey through an enzymatic process, such that the honey is never actually consumed by the bee, royal jelly is in fact the secretion of the bee itself. So the question is, what is the status of royal jelly? Is it to be treated like ordinary honey and to be considered kosher? Or is it sufficiently different and potentially non-kosher? To better understand the issues involved, we must first take a look at the sources for why ordinary honey is kosher. Chazal teach us an important rule that kol hayotze min hatameh tameh. That which is excreted from something that is not kosher is likewise not kosher. This rule explains why milk from non-kosher animals is non-kosher, and eggs from non-kosher birds and fish is also non-kosher. So first, we need to understand why even ordinary honey is acceptable. Why isn't honey included in this catch-all isser of hayotze min hatame tame? That which emanates from a non-kosher source is likewise non-kosher. The Gemara in Bechoros gives two explanations as for the permissibility of ordinary honey. The first explanation is that honey is not an excretion of the bee. The bees do not actually produce honey, but rather they merely collect the nectar, and enzymatically it is converted into honey. Since pollen is kosher, the honey remains kosher. The Gemara offers a second explanation for the permissibility of honey, that although in reality honey should be usur, it is nevertheless permitted as an exception to the rule based on a Talmudic teaching. The rabbis expounded upon a biblical verse as the source to teach us that honey is permitted, even though it emanates from a non-kosher source, the honeybee. If we accept the first answer of the Gemara, then honey is permitted because it is not a secretion of the bee, but rather it is just collected by the bee, then honey from wasps would also be acceptable, since it too is not a secretion. However, if we accept the second answer of the Gemara, that honey is permitted because we have a specific source in the Torah by which to learn out that it is permitted, then we cannot accept anything other than ordinary honeybee honey. Anything else which has a shem levai, a separate name, such as wasp, which is not referred to as plain honey, but rather as wasp honey, cannot be learned from the biblical verse that permits only plain honey. Now, regarding royal jelly, we can perhaps say the reverse. If we were to permit honey only because it is not a glandular secretion of the honeybee itself, then we must forbid royal jelly, since it is not just the collected nectar, but rather it is a secretion. However, if we were to permit honey because of the biblical verse, then perhaps royal jelly could be included under the same biblical source, and we could say that it too was included in that which was taught by the rabbis. However, this too is difficult to say, since both in appearance and in taste, it is very different from ordinary honey. Moreover, its name is not the same either. If we do not accept wasp honey, because we say that it has a shem levai, a separate name, and we cannot include more than the most basic ordinary honey, then royal jelly too should not be permitted, since it is not referred to as honey. Some have argued that wasp honey is only forbidden because the word wasp appears in its name. They argue that a shem levai is only significant when it specifically refers to the insect, as referred to the wasp in wasp honey, Otherwise, they argue that having a compound name is not significant, and therefore royal jelly should be permitted. Aside from the fact that there is no good rationale to make such a distinction, Rav Herschel Schachter, posek for the OU, also pointed out that the word royal in the word royal jelly refers to the queen bee. As we have discussed, this is the food which is fed to the queen bee and causes its special development. So the name of the product royal jelly really means queen bee jelly and is akin to the wasp honey. In each, the first word is the shem levi, since the insect is referred to in the name of the product. There are also those who have tried to argue that royal jelly is completely inedible, and therefore does not have the status of a food. The Torah views, for example, rotting meat, which is completely inedible, as losing its non-kosher status. Similarly, some argue royal jelly should be permissible, since it is completely inedible. The fallacy with this argument is that it is simply not true. Many non-Jews have eaten royal jelly, and they say that while it does have a slightly bitter taste, it is not at all inedible. This experiment was also conducted at the OU offices, with one of the non-Jewish workers agreeing to sample royal jelly and comment on its taste. The fact is that those who have tasted it describe it as having only a slightly bitter taste. To qualify for the leniency of being inedible, it must be completely repulsive, and royal jelly clearly does not reach that level. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, one of the great Torah giants of the last generation, also rejected the argument that royal jelly is inedible, and writes that royal jelly should be considered non-kosher. However, he considers the following leniency for a chayla, one who is sick, were doctors to prescribe the use of royal jelly. Obviously, if one is a chayla sheyesh bo sakana, one who is sick with an illness that could be considered possibly life-threatening, then one is permitted to eat any food that may cure this illness, even if it is from a non-kosher source. However, a chola she'ein bo sakana, one whose illness is not possibly life-threatening, is not permitted to eat non-kosher food to cure themselves. Rav Orbach considers the following leniency. May one consume a mixture of royal jelly and other ingredients where the royal jelly is a minority ingredient? Perhaps we can argue that although royal jelly is not completely inedible and is therefore forbidden to be eaten by itself, nevertheless, because it has a bitter taste, it will impart an off-taste, a tam lefgam, into the mixture, and could therefore be considered batel, nullified, in the mixture. Though one would not be permitted to nullify the royal jelly themselves, as this would be considered bitel iser lechatchila, intentional nullification of forbidden foods, which is not permitted, nevertheless, if one were to purchase the royal jelly in an already nullified state, then perhaps it would be permitted. In truth, this issue is reminiscent of a disagreement cited in Shulchan Aruch between the Rashba and the Ran, two of the great commentators from the period of the Rishonim. The opinion of the Rashba is that if a forbidden food falls into a pot of kosher soup and dissolves in the pot, such as that it cannot be removed, and the forbidden food imparts a tam lefgam, a disagreeable taste, into the soup, then the soup is permitted so long as the soup is the majority and the forbidden item the minority. This opinion is accepted by Shulchan Aruch and is the halacha. However, the Ran makes the following qualification. Although the soup qualitatively tastes worse than it did had the forbidden food not fallen in, yet if quantitatively there is a benefit in having more soup, and this quantitative benefit offsets the qualitative loss, then the soup is non-kosher. In other words, if there is a net benefit in having the forbidden food in one soup, since although the soup is less tasty, there are more portions of soup, if the level of pagam off taste exceeds any extra benefit, then the soup is permitted. But if the level of off taste is minimal, and the benefit of having more soup outweighs the negative taste, then it is forbidden. This reminds me of the famous complaint of the disgruntled restaurant goer who complained, "The food is awful and the portions are too small." The Shulchan Aruch brings the opinion of the Ran as a second opinion, which implies that he does not consider this opinion to be the strict halacha, yet believes it is praiseworthy to follow this opinion as well. Relating this question to our situation, we could summarize as follows. Although royal jelly imparts a bitter taste into a food in which it is mixed and be considered a tam lefgam, but if we also recognize the benefit in having royal jelly in one's food because of its beneficial properties, we would conclude that the benefit outweighs the negative taste. Therefore, according to the Ran, the nullification of the royal jelly would be questionable. However, when dealing with illness, when we are dealing with situations of great need, there is certainly reason to be lenient. But otherwise, if there is no strong need, perhaps one should not simply rely on nullification. Another acceptable form for taking necessary medicines is as a pill. If one can find these ingredients in pill form, then generally speaking, they can be taken by those who need them as well. One other issue that is discussed by Rabbi Orbach is whether one is permitted to do business, buy and sell royal jelly. There is a prohibition against doing business with foods that are biblically forbidden. There is a question as to whether this prohibition is biblical or rabbinic, but either way, it is clearly forbidden. At first glance, it would appear that this prohibition would apply to royal jelly as well, since the prohibition of eating royal jelly, since it comes from a non-kosher source, would be a Torah prohibition. However, Rabbi Orbach says that there might be reason to be more lenient, since it is ordinarily only eaten in a mixture with other ingredients in a minimal amount. Although the ingredient itself is forbidden, but since it is only used as an ingredient in a manner in which it is always nullified, perhaps the prohibition of doing business with this ingredient does not apply. There might be other mitigating factors as well, and this should be reviewed should the question arise. It is the position of the OU and its poskim, Rav Belsky and Rav Schechter, that royal jelly is not kosher, and it is not used in any OU products, even in cases where it would be nullified. If someone has a real need for using royal jelly, they should consult with their local rabbi. As we have seen, there can be permitted methods for taking royal jelly if there is a sufficient need. Thank you for listening to this edition of OU Kosher Radio.